you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, you are listening to a pre-lockdown edition of the China Sports Insider Podcast. I am Haig Balian, and I am with Mark Dreyer, who is the author of Sporting Superpower, an insider's view on China's quest to be the best. Mark, how was your panic buying experience this week?
Well, you say pre-lockdown. I'm hoping next week and all the subsequent weeks will also be pre-lockdown. Right now in Beijing, it's a bit odd, I think is probably the best way to describe it. We've been looking at Shanghai for the last month and a half. And there's been some pretty horrific, you know, videos and recordings and pictures circulating. And I think people are sort of bracing for, if not something similar. Well, I mean, even if without the really extreme stuff, no one really wants to be locked in at all. There's a lot of speculation, a lot of rumors. No one really knows what's going on. We're right now in Beijing. We've had three rounds. We're having three rounds this week of mass testing. So everyone has to be tested three times. And so the first day was Monday.
Yes.
Now, I wasn't feeling great on Monday, I'll be honest. I had a little bit of a cold, nothing major at all. On Sunday, I had a bit of a sore throat, a bit of a runny nose. And of course, in this environment, you're thinking, and they've just announced on Sunday mass testing. So you're thinking, well, I got COVID, right? But I know that I'm not really sick. I've just got a bit of a sniffle. And I'm thinking, well, I know that also in a day or two, even if I do have COVID, I'm going to be absolutely fine. And I don't want to test positive and then be absolutely fine and then be basically locked up in one of these detention centers, which by all accounts is not a place you want to be.
You don't want to be
there. Yeah.
Okay. So I just want to be clear. Okay,
yeah,
good.
It seems pretty clear that that is not a place you want to be.
No.
And so I was thinking, well, I don't really want to get tested. So I actually delayed my Monday test until Tuesday. And I felt, you know, much, much better.
Right.
And I was fine basically on Monday.
Yeah.
But this is the environment that kind of we're in.
Yeah.
I'm sure for a fact that there's thousands of people out of the millions of people in Beijing who haven't been tested. Because there's no real way to make you get tested.
The only way really is, say, you know, your building won't let you in unless you have a test. Or if you have a very zealous building association or something like that, that's checking up on you all the time.
But, and this will take a bit of time to catch up because
you're right.
All on our phones will have this health code that we scan, and sometimes your health kit will have a pop-up or have an error message. But it takes a little bit of time to kind of, you know, catch up in the system. I know someone who didn't get tested, and, you know, they don't have that message. But it does feel, you know, we're kind of bracing for the inevitable, I think, at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I was pessimistic last week, really pessimistic over the weekend when there was sort of, you know, I say an explosion of cases, but, you know, it was like 20 cases or something like that, which is, you know, anywhere else in the world, that's just a minuscule number. And I thought for sure this week there'd be, you know, we would definitely get into something a little bit more serious. Luckily, that hasn't happened yet. And now you went viral this week on Twitter with a photo that you tweeted out from with empty shelves. And
so Sunday we all got notified that we're going to have to do in the central district of Chaoyang, where we are right now.
Yeah.
We all had to do three rounds of mass testing Monday, Wednesday, Friday of this week. We're recording this on Wednesday. And a colleague had immediately headed out with her dad to the supermarket and sent some photos and was like, okay, It's absolutely packed. Like 8:45 on a Sunday night. She said it was rammed, you know, and there was food there, but it was flying off the shelves. And I tweeted out a couple of those pictures, which was still getting some pickup like a day and a half later. Now, in fairness, it seemed that the replenishing of the shelves was remarkably good.
Absolutely. I was at the store yesterday at Jenny Lu's, which is a supermarket chain here in Beijing. Full shelves.
People have had a lot more time to prepare for this just because we've been watching what's going on for Shanghai. So even before the testing was announced, and if and when they announce a lockdown, there will be a little bit of time. They're not going to say as of now, at least they haven't done previously. They'll give you a few hours to kind of go out and do one last shop, which really will be, you know, panic buying. But yeah, so far it's been a lot smoother. And I think because of the lessons, the mess that people have seen in Shanghai, authorities here are even more worried about it. And it being Beijing, the central capital, like they're already at that level, already a lot tighter, but they're even more worried about not making a mess here.
So as you can tell, it's kind of hard to think about anything other than the lockdowns and COVID, but this is the China Sports Insider podcast.
We're dropping the sports for this week. Just the China Insider podcast.
Exactly. Today we're going to check in on Cameron Wilson. You might remember that we talked to him a month ago when he had just entered lockdown at home in Shanghai. Well, he is still in lockdown in Shanghai. So we wanted to reach out and see how he's doing and talk a little bit about football as well.
Yeah, just fair warning there. Cammy's, I think, temper is somewhat frayed.
Listen, 40 days in lockdown, you know, I can
fully understand.
Totally understandable. But let's talk about a possible postponement of the Asian game. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about a piece I wrote in Sub China as well. Mark, one of your year-end predictions for 2022 was that the Olympics would be the only major sporting event that China would host this year. Now, for a while, it looked like you were wrong, but now I think you might be right.
Never doubt me, Hike. Never doubt me.
I don't. It's a hard-learned lesson.
So the Asian Games is September in the city of Hangzhou, which has seen a number of sort of semi-permanent lockdowns over the last few months. In fact, it had some cases a while ago around Chinese New Year. There was some temporary lockdowns as well. So it's kind of been on and off. It does look increasingly like it's going to just not be in a position to host it. But it's still too early to say for sure. I think almost as soon as I made that prediction, I thought, oh, well, actually things are going pretty well, and I could be wrong. But it's coming back around full circle.
Yeah.
So it's a very important year for China politically. There's a big congress where Chinese President Xi Jinping is expected to get yet more power towards the end of this year, around the same time, actually, as the Asian Games. And so they don't want anything to derail that. But being able to host, you know, a big international tournament, it's the Asian Games. It's kind of second only to the Olympics in this part of the world, at least in terms of a multi-sport event. They definitely want to be able to say that they can host a safe games. But then at that point, if we're going into another of these Olympic-related bubbles where it's very restricted, no fans, the atmosphere is frankly completely absent, like you start to wonder what's the point. The only point really is to say we have ticked this box of being able to host the event. But like it's not enjoyable. No one's able to go. Like the Olympics, you know, the more I reflect on the Winter Olympics, the more, I guess, sadness I have, just because the people weren't able to enjoy it, you know, and the athletes themselves weren't able to celebrate in front of a crowd.
I mean, there was no hangover because there was no party.
Yeah.
What is the scale of the Asian Games? You mentioned it's sort of like Olympic-like. Is it as many athletes? How many people come here?
It's not quite as big, but it is a massive event. There's some quite different sports as well, and some Asian-focused sports as well, particularly when it comes to sort of the martial arts. I think the big one that's been getting a lot of attention is actually esports will be a medal event for the first time.
Yeah.
It's been a demonstration event in the past. You know, the people who say that esports are coming for the Olympics, well, it's coming into the Asian Games, and it's a big deal. We've talked about esports here on the podcast before. So that would be kind of an interesting one.
You know what else is having its debut at Hangzhou?
Which one?
Breakdancing.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, you know, I just don't want to miss that one. So.
you're trying to make a late run. Well, I heard that China is going to be recruiting. So maybe, as you know, you can duck into.
Yeah, maybe.
Make a late bid for Team China. So, Haig, one other thing to talk about this week, and this is a great piece that you wrote on Sup China on the website, which everyone should check out, about cycling here. And actually going back, like, it's been one of the, you know, if we look at the growth of sports in China, we've kind of had three main waves. There was the soccer boom and now bust to a certain extent, winter sports growth building up to the Olympics. And then what people refer to as mass participation, which includes, you know, running, marathon, fitness, but cycling is a big part of that.
Right.
Tell us about the article.
Yeah, it's about Shannon Buffton, who is the co-founder of a company here called Cirque. And he is somebody who, since 2009, really, has been pioneering these routes along in Beijing's mountains.
Cycling routes and like for amateur riders? For
what, yeah, kind of level? Well, for amateur riders, I mean, he is a former competitive rider himself. And he, you know, I didn't get into this in the piece, but he did work on something called the Tour of Beijing back in 13, 14.
Yeah, that was a big UCI, big international
That's
event
right.
here.
Yeah.
It was pretty big for a while, and then it kind of just faded out, I think. I remember there was one Chinese rider, I think, in history to date who's ridden in the Tour de France, and he was not near the front of the
right.
not near the front of the peloton, but
yeah,
hey,
yeah.
Someone's got to kind of pioneer. I know about Shannon vaguely through a friend of mine, a guy called Mike, who's now back in the States. And he did this thing called Everesting. Now, what this is basically you have to climb on a road the height of Mount Everest from sea level to the top, to the summit. So it's, you know, 8,000 plus meters. Now, what you need to do is you take a stretch of road and you ride up it. And then you take the height, and then whatever that is, you cycle back down, you get to the bottom, you go as many times as it takes until you've climbed 8,000 meters. It takes, for very, very good amateur riders, about 24 hours. And Mike and another friend of his did it on the outskirts of Beijing. They found a route in the hills. But basically, with all the support of Shannon and his team, you know, it was insane. It was like a WeChat group following their progress.
Well, that's the thing, though. You can do that in Beijing. Yeah. I mean, there are these amazing mountains that go up to 2,000 meters.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people outside of China really know about this. So, yeah. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to write this piece.
Yeah. So speaking of the piece, there's a little bit of controversy, as I understand it, between, you know, the Shannon, who's sort of been pioneering, but perhaps not by himself. What's going on there?
Well, so Shannon and Cirque pioneered these routes that have sort of become the classics in Beijing. There's one called the Beijing Stelvio, which is over in Fangshan, which is a couple of hours west of the city center. And it's gorgeous. It's an amazing, amazing route. Now, I spoke with somebody called Harry Lee. Shannon introduced me to him and said that he is the voice of Chinese racing. He's a longtime rider, TV commentator. And he sort of downplayed Shannon's role in pioneering these routes. He said that what Shannon really did was translate a lot of these routes to a Western, you know, Westerners, foreigners who are here, and that these routes were already mature by the time Shannon got here. So I went back to Shannon and I said, well, Shannon, this is really surprising. He's like, yeah, it's surprising. It's surprising to me too.
Drama in the cycling
world. It was a little bit of drama because I did, you know what, my goal, I kind of just wanted to write a piece about Beijing cycling and, you know, this amazing secret that nobody knows about and this really cool stuff that Cirque is doing, you know, in terms of the environment, in terms of the work that they're doing with racing team called Masaka Racing. It's really, really cool. I couldn't get to any of that space because I really had to explore this sort of debate, which was really interesting, I thought.
So this is a little bit of a thing in the cycling community here. I mean, like from my perspective, it's like, well, you know, the roads are the roads. Do we really care who first rode them or not? You know, the fact that cycling is growing here should be the main point, right?
I asked Shannon, like, why does this matter? Like, why does it matter to him who pioneered the roads? And he, you know, his answer was, look, people put a lot of effort into this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the way he looks at cycling is it's a way for people to have independence, and he wants to push people to do everything that they can. But also, I mean, I thought this was interesting, was that he says that the roads in Beijing have become crowded, and he's looking at new frontiers, which is gravel cycling, which is, you know, sort of going even further out of Beijing into Hebei province. Hebei is the province that, that surrounds Beijing. And he said, well, Harry Lee is probably doing the same thing, and that's one of his motivations. There was a suggestion that he had.
The conflict continues.
It was a bit of a conflict. Wow. Exactly. It was a bit of a conflict. Now, I don't think either, like, I mean, I think both are sincere in their, you know, for sure in their love of cycling. Yeah, so I, you know, it's something to watch out for, I think, in the coming years, especially if you care about cycling, which I do. I've become so invested in this topic.
I mean, I know Shannon has taken some awesome trips in other parts of the country, down to Tibet as well. Some of the pictures from there.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who've done the multi-day Cirque trips. I haven't been able to so far. And, you know, this summer, I don't think it's going to happen in China, but let's see.
Well, Haig, that was enough about sports. Let's get back down to the topic of lockdowns, which is front and center for us. And let's check in again with Cameron Wilson, who is... Well, he's been in for well over a month lockdown in Shanghai, and we spoke to him a bit earlier.
Hey, Cameron. Hello, how are you? Okay, so people can't see this, but there's a...
I'm going to show you something even worse. This is a bottle of HB sauce, which is so finished I had to pour vinegar in it to get the last drops out. So this is a crisis mode is in full swing now. Not so bad.
Wow. And then on the other hand, it looks like a very cold beer.
It is a cold beer. This is my second last one. I might be able to get some more, but I'm going to savor it whilst I can.
Tragedy. So just to give our audience a little bit of context here, we on March 31, Cameron, we spoke to you. And by that point, you know, you're in Shanghai. And by that point, you'd been in lockdown for... you know, a few weeks by that point, I believe. I cannot believe you're still in lockdown.
Today's actually the 40th day. I tweeted the 40th day yesterday, but I mean, it's been so long, I just totally lost track. But I actually looked at the calendar, and today is the 40th day. So
I want to say thank you so much for making time in your busy schedule to squeeze us in. Tell us what a daily schedule looks like.
What's a daily schedule? I mean... I try to make a schedule. I try to go out in the morning and use the exercise machines in our compound, but because we're not supposed to go outside at all, but in the morning there's no one around, so it seems to be okay. But even that, I don't do it every day. It just depends on what mood I'm in. This week I'm actually have annual leave from a company, so I've had to use it before the end of May, at the start of May. So unfortunately, this isn't what I had in mind for my leave period, but there we go.
You know, it's interesting. I was just telling my wife, like, it just seems like our world is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. You know, last year we could move around. You know, I was in Shanghai for a little bit, and then over the summer we were in Guilin. But I mean, at this point, I mean, we can't leave Beijing at this point because for fear of, you know, not being able to come out. And of course, you're not even able to leave your home.
Yeah, I'm not only can I not leave my apartment, but I'm kind of scared to leave my little man cave here, because as soon as I do, I'll be accosted by my daughter or my mother-in-law or my wife wanting me to do this or that. So this is like my little sanctuary in here.
So, Cammy, we've been sort of messaging and had a few other chats off air. Give us a sense of what it's been like. Like, you know, the highs and the lows, if there've been any highs. But, you know, what's it been like 40 days on? I mean, it's ridiculous.
I mean, to be really honest, it's there are some positives. I mean, got to know our neighbours pretty well. There's been some good instances of people helping each other out. We've been helping. My wife's been helping people who are literally sealed inside their apartment. I mean, not literally. Get hold of food. Like, what you can do is you can order it, and then you can give it to the health workers outside these apartments, and they'll unlock the steel fences and take supplies up to them. That's been nice.
Why are they sealed and you're not?
Because their buildings have people who are confirmed positive. So, I mean, to be honest, when I saw that, I mean, it's just, it just flipped a switch in my head. I was just like, I mean, come on. I mean, how, what kind of place?
You're talking about the green fences. You're talking about the green fences that have gone up.
I mean, I can see one right now out my window. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, how can you? I don't know what to say. Yeah, we're quarantining and we're trying to cut down transmission of COVID, but I really don't think that's necessary. It's also illegal according to Chinese law, and it's just totally morally repugnant, and it disgusts me.
How are you for food right now? Like, how are your stocks at home?
Food stocks have actually got better because they brought in a whole army of QID drivers from, like, delivery drivers from outside of Shanghai. But these guys have been called Gansuzidui. It basically means death squad. Basically, they're joking that they are on like a suicide mission because they know they're going to test positive sooner rather than later. But they're happy to go to Shanghai and earn as much money as they can because these guys, obviously, in normal times, don't earn a lot of cash.
So, Cammy, there seems to be like the number of ways in which China has been counting these cases over the last, well, however long, it seems to change several times. But the latest thing is cases in society versus outside of society. Can you explain what's going on? What does this mean? What's the goal here in terms of like getting down to zero cases within society, if I'm getting this right?
As I understand it, they keep redefining the figures. So the latest thing, cases in society, means cases among people who are not under lockdown, which you're probably wondering how many people that is. I don't know, but there are people who are able to get out because they perform essential work. Delivery drivers, police, emergency workers, healthcare, people who work with utilities, electricity, gas, and so on. I'm guessing that's what it means because I don't know anybody in Shanghai who is able to get out except one of my neighbours who I know he works for the government. That's what that figure means, as I understand.
And meanwhile, amongst lockdown, people are still testing positive even though they're having very, very limited contact with anyone else apart from when people are summoned outside for testing, right? So how's that transmission happening? Through the delivery workers?
It seems to be. I mean, to be quite honest, it's getting a little bit Lord of the Flies in our compound because there's four buildings have had positive cases in the last 3 or 4 days. And we've been under lockdown. At that point, we've been under lockdown for 35 days. So not only that, it's also been spreading from apartment to apartment in different buildings. So you can imagine the kind of fear which is spreading amongst people. And there's lots of arguments in WeChat groups. People who are saying, oh, you should just basically evacuate the building. Or there was one person who tested positive, but then they tested negative and they refused to go. And then the neighbours were basically ganging up on the neighbourhood committee saying, we want this person to be taken out of the apartment as soon as possible. The infection's spreading through the pipes and it's a really pretty bad situation.
And I've also heard of cases where, you know, neighbours are actually saying, well, we don't want this person to go. We're happy for this person to stay in our community. Doesn't sound like that as an argument that the authorities tend to listen to.
No, I mean, they don't listen to any reason. I mean, I said in my WeChat group, in my compound, as I said, I support anybody who wants to do quarantine at home. And I got a few kind of plus ones, but there was also some kind of really indignant people who were just like, well, disease is going to spread and there's old people who are not vaccinated. So I'm like, well, so we knew this was going to happen. This was inevitable. This was completely predictable for years. So why are we not vaccinated? Why is it I look at my window? They've got the amount of resources they've spent on things like sealing people into their buildings, spraying bleach in the air everywhere, locking down the entire apartment, the entire compound, bringing in an army of delivery drivers from outside Shanghai, like killing people's pets, separating parents from kids. They do all this stuff, and they don't vaccinate people. There's no program right now to vaccinate people on an emergency basis. That's the only way to get out of this. It's to vaccinate people who haven't been vaccinated yet as quickly as possible. But they're not doing it. I mean, it's absurd. It's absurd, and there needs to be more people out there who are questioning why this is not happening, because I can't think of any reason right now why somehow it's okay to spend a ridiculous amount of resources. Like, they're putting bleach on the Bund. No one's been on the Bund for like a month, and this is what they're doing and putting it in their English language media. It's just totally ridiculous. And after all this time, I try to be rational and try to keep a somewhat objective look at things. When you just look at this and you just look at what's going on and you look at the obvious solution, which is vaccinate all the people who have not been vaccinated yet and who need it, and it's not happening, and you really need to ask why.
You know, Cameron, one of the topics that people really talk about on Twitter is all the people, all the foreigners in Shanghai especially, but also outside of Shanghai, who are, you know, sort of this push is pushing them to really consider their future in this country, in China. I know this is kind of a personal question, and you don't have to, obviously you don't have to answer it if you don't want to, but is that a conversation that you're having?
Yes. I had this conversation with my wife. I mean, to be really honest, I'm extremely emotionally invested in China. I think I just got some nice chicken bones, chicken drumsticks for my wife.
Looks delightful.
Yeah. She's probably given me this to kind of control my mood so I don't kind of flip out in what I say.
She heard your rant just then.
Giving a dog a bone is to stop him from biting you. I would say that as far as my life goes in China, my happiness in China, why I've been here a long time, is based on that. I've invested a lot emotionally in the place, got to know the people, have now a Chinese family, wife, daughter, parents-in-law. Also, I'm well known through my work writing about Chinese football, and also my kind of attachment to Shanghai Shenhua, the team, and all the friends, the community I've become involved in through that. So for me, my roots here are really deep, and it's been 16 years. On a social level, I think China is still an amazing place, and the people are amazing. There's so many interesting ways of looking at things, things you learn, perspectives, things which are different to where you come from, and that's so viable, and it's such an amazing learning experience. So I've got like as much reason to stay as anybody. But at this point, I'm just like, what the hell? We can be living in this is supposed to be an international city, which puts itself up there with Paris, Tokyo, New York, London, all that. And you're killing dogs on the street. You're locking people up because they've got a cough. You're sealing people in their houses. You know, it just pulls the veil off. It pulls the veneer off what Shanghai and China really is. And it's just not pretty. It's dark. To cut long story short, I hope to leave within, I don't know, I guess 18 months, something like that.
So, Cammy, on the plus side, when you were tweeting about Chinese football, no one was really paying much attention, but I think in the last month or so, your Twitter followers have doubled.
Yeah, so, pretty much. I mean, I don't pay attention to the number. I don't actually know. And it was just... I actually thought I had like 1,500 followers, but then when I checked, it was something like just under 3,000. Because I noticed I started getting more followers, and now it's like over 5. So, yeah, they're going to be pretty disappointed when I go back to ranting about.
Seamless
segue into football.
Well, I was going to say, like, there are a couple of football stories that I wanted to ask you, but I'm not even sure if you're paying attention to any football news right now. So, for example, I saw Marwan Fellaini is back. Do you even want to talk about this? We don't have to.
No, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's like distracting me with football now instead of chicken bones.
Well, I mean, I saw that he was back, and he's back for the season, which I guess that's something. It sounds like the CSL is going to actually start very soon with actual players.
Well, I was I was pretty surprised to see Fellaini returning, although he tested positive for COVID a long time ago at the start of all this, so maybe he's been there and seen it and done it, and just wants to get back to China and earn money. Yeah, it's interesting. It definitely flies in the face of the current trend of less foreign players come in. I mean, he must have been taking quite a pay cut to still be here. If you look at what's happening with other teams, that's definitely going to be a wider trend. If you see any big players still in China, you can be sure they're not earning anywhere near as much money as they did before. The other story I saw, which was interesting, was they've confirmed that the CSL will be 18 teams. It'll be three up, three down. So that's interesting as well. It kind of goes against the grain. The CSL is expanding when there's actually less teams who are, have the wherewithal to play at that level. But nevertheless, it is what it is.
Now, Cammy, how much do we know about this upcoming season? Initially, they would have tried to play in the bubble system as they did before, and Hangzhou was there, but that's been kind of under semi or permanent lockdown, so they've been looking for alternative places. I saw a post that a city called Rejiao in Shandong, apparently 3 million people, I'd never even heard of this place. That sort of speaks to the size of China. And someone was saying, well, this, they have a football-specific stadium, 34,000. I was thinking, well, to be honest, it doesn't really matter how many seats are in the stadium because there won't be any fans.
Yeah, I've actually been to Rejiao. I've been there one time to a music festival. So I know how small it is. And I was quite puzzled to see they built a football-specific stadium there. That was surprising. But then even in Shanghai, there's used to be Shanghai Shenxin, who went bust a few years ago. They had a football-specific stadium, and it was down in Jinshan, which is about 50 kilometers from downtown Shanghai. So you get these stadiums just popping up everywhere, and it really looks like there's not an awful lot of thought goes into who's actually going to sit in these stadiums. I think the point is that for the upcoming season, unfortunately, because of all the disruption, the question of, not so much the question of who wins, but the question of who goes down at the other end is increasingly being settled by off-pitch matters. That basically means that teams will be saved because other clubs go bust and end up not getting relegated or not getting promoted. So from the competition point of view, the movement of teams between the China League One and the CSL is going to be, I'm afraid, is going to remain fairly meaningless for this season and maybe the next few as well.
Now, I saw a post the other day that in Singapore, they're going to have a Premier League preseason game in July, July 15th, between Liverpool and Crystal Palace. Now, you know, these preseason tours are not that at most about kind of fitness on the football front and about kind of other reasons, as we know. But it just occurred to me with China giving up the rights to host the East Asian football tournament and, you know, like the chances of foreign teams, whether it's Premier League or Bundesliga or whatever, coming to China, I mean, for sure this year is completely out. But it feels like we're light years behind places like Singapore and well, increasingly almost everywhere else. Like, when can you see international sporting events coming back to China? And is next year's Asian Championship in doubt?
They should take the Asian Championship away right now. If you as a country, if you're not able to let international fans easily attend an international sports event, then you shouldn't be hosting it. That's just, for me, that's really clear. It's really a pity because China's more than capable of hosting it and they've done it before, I think 2004. I think these things do help, you know, bring a long interest in football in general, but you shouldn't be hosting it if you're not going to have a proper open border. And the open border's not going to open before the Asian Cup next year. At least not properly.
Okay, so it's going to be June next year. So we're looking at the Asian Cup scheduled for June next year. A lot needs to happen.
I mean, Cammy, to
your point about taking it away, like when do you have to make that? It's too early to make that call. It is. Like I see what you're saying. There needs to be international fans allowing to travel here, but like, at what point does China need to open up to say, like, well, we can not just safely host it, but, you know, do something other than another bubble tournament?
Well, there needs to be a commitment to open the border properly. There can't be any kind of wishy-washy, funny games played like, oh, yeah, we're going to make it easier for people to get a code or whatever. Just open the border. You know, if you can't do that, then just don't host it. I mean, no one will blame China if they say, look, we don't want to host this tournament until such times as we've opened the border. That would be fair enough. I don't know. They need to make a decision by the end of the year.
Yeah, and not to mention, like, we remember the stress that all the athletes who are coming to to Beijing for the Olympics we're going through, right? And, you know, in the weeks prior to the games and, you know, thinking, okay, well, if we get COVID, we can't compete. Or if we come in, like, we'll be put into isolation. We can't compete. I mean, luckily, at the Beijing Olympics, it didn't really have an impact on the competition.
Cammy, I got to ask you one thing before we let you go and get back to your incredibly busy schedule of chicken wings and beer drinking. There was you were telling me the other day about some pot banging and you know, some singing songs in the compound, and I was just wondering if you could expand on this a little bit. We've got a little bit of Scottish football culture creeping into Pudong district in Shanghai. What's been going on there with the chanting out of your window?
They got a rendition in the Scottish vernacular when I just kind of lost it, to be really honest. After the 20th test, I just stuck my head out the window. I basically roared in Chinese. I was like, you know, what the hell are you doing? How many times do we need to get tested? This is ridiculous. I've been tested negative more than 20 times in the last month. Why are you wasting our time? Why are you bringing this down? When you're like, when you're kind of angry, you kind of lapse back into your kind of native way of expression. So, but of course, I'm the only foreigner in this whole compound, so I was trying to kind of mentally translate that into Chinese. It probably sounded like ridiculously stupid. Much to my amazement, loads of neighbors opened their windows and stuck their heads out and joined in. And basically, they were shouting their heads off at the kind of the health workers. My mother-in-law came in. She looked absolutely horrified. She's like, "Cammy, stop it. You're causing a scene." I said, "Hey, look, it's been 35 days. Come on." He goes, "Everybody's got a limit. Please have some. You should at least appreciate the fact that I've not done anything remotely like this for so long." And I think, you know, I went outside and I actually apologized to my neighbors.
But did you get outed? Did you get outed as the foreigner in a WeChat group? What happened there?
No, people were saying what happened in Building 15. And I said there was some crazed yelling from there. But the thing is, there was someone had recorded it, but they weren't able to, because their apartment is, they couldn't see who it was. So actually, I managed to get away with it. It was only people in my building who realized it. My mother-in-law now briefs my wife to tell me in advance that a COVID test is coming, to please mentally prepare myself for that.
What is the outlook? Like, what are people saying, the expectation for letting you guys out? I mean, there are, you know, apparently people who are in society, but like, as you said, most people aren't aware of these people. Like, when are you now expecting to get out?
We had a positive test, a positive case a few days ago confirmed. So according to the rules, which of course may change at any moment, that means we would be locked down for another 14 days. So that means it would take us beyond 50 days. And I, to be honest, think it'll be more than that for us. But I mean, people have stopped talking about when they're going to get out. People have basically realized it's a futile discussion and are just trying to soldier on as they can.
Well, Cameron, I hate to leave it at such a negative sentiment, but you know, thank you so much for talking to us, and I really hope it's not that long. I hope you do get to enjoy the outdoors very, very soon. So thank you so much for joining us.
I'm just gonna go back to telling dick and fart jokes around my apartment. That's all I've got right now.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks so much. Well, that's it for China Sports Insider Podcast this week. Thank you so much for listening, Mark. This next week is going to be really, really interesting. Hopefully, you're going to be here with me a week from today.
Yeah, I hope so too.
In the meantime, where can people find you?
Twitter is probably the easiest one. I am at DreyerChina, DreyerChina.
We will be back next week.